Hackintoshes on a laptop, from what I gather, are very hard.
I always wanted to do that too, a Hackintosh. Seems fun.
Does that seem fun? Is that what it
fun
seems?
Fun is subjective. Hella subjective.
More subjective than I thought.
Do you like brain teasers? Do you like brain teasers that could potentially break your computer?
Yes. $1,000 brain teaser.
I've got a bit of a riddle for you.
Riddle me this, Batman. I've installed two operating systems on my computer. Why does Zoom not work anymore? So Lorna is gliding up those stairs, and I think will move as she kind of moves up this staircase. Her and her drowned sailors, those who are closest to her, move as though they are completely unperturbed by the rushing water moving down these narrow staircases. As she has circumvented the barricades that were set up, she is able to move and flow easily into the city. Jonnet is, I think, looking at a rung that is closest to the town square. And there is this main kind of thoroughfare that moves from the town square through this mercantile district, then a brief, like, intermixed residential district, and finally to the dock area where the skyships are located. So she is coming into this mercantile district, sort of severing the flow between the town square and the Uhuru. And I think quickly she confronts a group of civilians who are moving with Uhuru pirates towards the Uhuru, and she flicks her hands and water flicks off of her fingertips and cuts through the air, and we can see that it is flying through the air like knives as she makes an attack against the crew of the Uhuru, and we'll call it the civilians as well.
But what if it like wasn't the civilians? What if it was nobody?
I mean, if you would like to put more members of the crew of the Uhuru at risk, if they are literally willing to dive into the way of an attack to save civilians, we can do that.
Oh, moral questions. Nah, later.
Do it. Okay, we got one vote to not do it, one vote to do it. Liz, you're the tiebreaker.
Abstain.
Abstain? Okay, so that's a 50-50 there, so I just need to roll an even odd result on a die.
Oh man. There needs to be more dice rolling in politics.
James, did you not have your dice with you?
Well, I mean, I have my Genesis dice prepared. I didn't have my mundane dice prepared. Gonna roll this. It is an even result. I think that means the members of the crew of the Uhuru are very seriously taking stewardship of this town into account, and they are willing to risk their lives to protect these people. So I am going
to get a new crew.
Yeah. Well, it'll be easy to get a new crew because the old crew is putting themselves in harm's way. So I am increase the Uhuru death chart range to 40, but civilians will not be impacted by this attack. I am going to roll.
I mean, you mean ever through this whole thing or just...
No. This particular attack, like you can decide blow by blow. Yeah, you know, maybe Timmy the Lips isn't the type to really put himself at risk, but Wise Willie is. So, you know, we figure that out as we move. Holy shit. That's a wild fucking roll from Lorna. She really kicks some ass. That is 4 successes.
Ooh. Nothing else.
So that means that is essentially 4 rolls against the Uhuru death chart. So I just have to.
Woo.
It's only a 40% chance. It is more than 0. So
it's more than 30.
I just need to roll.
It's more than 39.
4D percentiles. Holy shit, what a great roll for the Uhuru. 82, 70, 87, 81. Oh, none of those kill any members of the Uhuru crew, which is great. So these water knives are flying through the air, and pirates bravely brace themselves against these knives. And I think this is a moment where we... reveal that some members of the Uhuru crew have probably faced mariners before in their past, and they are familiar with attacks like this. They raise the broadsides of their scabbards and coats up against this, and I think the water impacts, and you can see if it was flesh, they would have been torn open. But the leather of their scabbards and coats, that tough leather, is torn as the water hits them, and they stumble backwards, but it does not injure them. These grim-faced pirates draw their sabers and ready themselves to fight. And just so we have a name to put to these pirates, I am going to do a quick roll. Toku!
Hey!
Toku is leading this particular group of pirates. What's Toku's weapon look like, Tyler?
Ooh.
Yeah.
I feel like it's just like I don't know what that sword is called. It's like a very curved blade. It's
scimitar.
Very elegant. Thank you.
Ooh.
One more time.
Oh,
yeah, scimitar.
Yeah, so cool.
It's very elegant. It's very beautiful. It's incredibly deadly. Twice, he's so good in the kitchen, man. He loves knives. Good with knives.
I love this. Scimitar is like, especially in film, I don't know how much this remains true for scimitar actual fighting styles, but like whenever anybody has a scimitar, they always start the fight by doing these 6 scimitar tricks. You know, like
yes. Like
a butterfly knife trick display, but with a big sword. So I think instead of bracing against his scabbard, Toku just like does these scimitar tricks and like cuts the water blade in half.
Yeah.
Like Lorna looks with a grim face as she gestures to her drowned sailors to move forward and meet the Uhuru crew in a fight. So swords start crashing there. Lorna looks down the winding alleyway and looking like as though she is staring through buildings, looks exactly in Jonnet's direction, just laser focused in.
Stop looking.
And like because she is looking, as I think Tyler would say, like, yeah, the biggest threat is that anyone looks at Jonnet. We can now see Lorna's face more clearly. her skin was clearly darker in life, but like she has a death-faced pale, as though blood has drained from her body. She looks withered and disheveled in this torn white dress, and she wears a veil. But through that veil, we can see on her face, her eyes have tears running down them in a permanent tear-stained kind of rictus. Her mouth is opened in this unearthly grin, and her eyes are blind. She has long nails that really add like a dramatic flair to this torn dress. She is a terrifying, ghostly presence. With that, I want to, Liz, have you control the ship in the sky right now.
I was about to ask if you could do that.
Please tell me what they're up to.
How many boats are in the harbor? Are all five there?
So there are, right now, immediately landed, there are two in the harbor. You can probably, like, I won't make a perception check. I think on the horizon, you can see the ghostly blue-green lights of whatever flames allow the mariners to see through storm and dark in the distance. They are gathered at what would be the mouth to this cove if Nordia wasn't flooded. They haven't crossed whatever area that would allow them into the bay because, like we said earlier, there is kind of this natural land defense that is preventing larger ships from getting in. But they are lined up with their broadsides facing Nordia, presumably to fire with cannons.
Okay. They're just going to do a ranged attack with the cannons.
Cool. Let's see. We have three named characters on this particular boat. One, two, and three. So you get three yellow dice to this attack. I am going to say it is at long range. So this is going to be a hard check, though cannons do a sick amount of damage.
That's three.
So yeah, it's three yellow versus three purple with one black die because the crew has one black die.
Okay. And I can't adjust that with my own stats, correct?
No, you can't adjust it with the crew is just kind of on their own.
The crew. All right, let's see. Oh, that is just one success.
Hey, that's good enough, though. Hey.
Good enough.
Right now, there are a lot of the people who have boarded this ship. Like, I think the main named characters, Nodos and Wendell, are responsible for shoveling coal into this furnace. The Il Sangue Dio has a couple things moving against it. One is they don't have a full featherweave sail. Featherweave, I think, is fairly water resistant. It is like kind of a dense fabric, even though it is very light. It resists water and does not get waterlogged very much. Il Sangue Dio has sails that are designed to use as little featherweave as possible, which means that the canvas or whatever other material is starting to get waterlogged, which means even more coal needs to get shoveled into that fire to keep it aloft. So the biggest, strongest characters are really hell-bent on shoveling that coal. Slam, who is also a big, strong boy, is manning the helm right now.
Yeah.
So can't help with that. And all of the various unnamed pirates that are part of this operation are working on manning those cannons below deck, on loading up different cannons. I think they've done a thing where they're loading a rotation of cannons. Cannons get lined up to be fired and then swapped out for a fresh cannon, which is a difficult operation and really threatens this ship for being lopsided, which is playing hell on what they need to do directing the furnaces and at the helm. But they've managed to stabilize the ship enough for their first volley. The ship rocks and You can hear a ringing of the heart bell as it is thrown off of its center axis, as like it just moves with the impact of that cannon shot. The cannonballs sail through the air, cutting through rain and wind to hit the side of the Mariner's ship. Directly on this large ship, hitting its broadsides, splintering the waterlogged and rotten wood aboard the ship everywhere. We can see many drowned sailors are impacted by this. And we can also see a dark presence shrouded in shadows standing aboard this ship, looking out across the waters towards Nordia as chunks of wood sail past his face and over his shoulder. I don't think we can really see the Mariner in full relief, but he like shifts his gaze slightly, and we know that Il Sangue Dio has been noticed. We can see from the Mariner's perspective the faint red glow of the few patches of weave aboard this ship has been detected as he stares up. This dealt a good amount of damage, like 10, 11 damage to this ship. So I think that is a good impact. There is no cheering aboard Il Sangue Dio. Everyone is enmeshed in the mission that they have in front of them. Even though their strikes hit true, they will need more cannon fire in order to make a real dent and survive this night. So immediately they start pulling and rolling cannons away and rolling new ones into place to fire the next volley. With this, I want to know, Johnny, before we get to Travis's turn, I want to know where the birds are.
Oh, was I with them, or do you?
We had Liz control and cannons, so I just want to kind of spread out responsibility of communal assets.
Okay, I'll take the birds. I thought for a second it was like, you had these birds with you. Where did they go?
What did you do to the birds?
You lost your birds.
I think that they might be kind of like doing patrol flights, maybe circling around either the Uhuru or like where some more vulnerable civilians might be, or maybe split up. So like one around the Uhuru, one around like some area of the city where vulnerable civilians are, and maybe one going back and forth to like if they need to be at one place to help out.
I really, really like that because that means what the birds are essentially doing for most of this fight is facilitating communication between different like segments of the Uhuru. It means that even though Ryan Lochte kind of went rogue a little bit leading this diversion, the rest of the crew knows about it. And they're probably communicating. I think there are different colored flares that they're waving to communicate like specific information so it can be seen from the sky. So with that, I am going to say any action that you're trying to do that would depend or be aided by eyes in the sky, everybody is just going to get a blue die because these birds are in the mix.
Thank you.
With that, let's turn to Travis. Travis, okay. You have just been washed down the staircase, separated from Margaret, though you know you managed to like get her out of this situation. But you are now surrounded by drowned sailors, and you have to somehow rally with the troops. You can either try to ascend this staircase once more, which just has a lot of water rushing down it, or you can fight your way out or do whatever. I'm curious to see what Travis is going to do.
So how many boys are there? A lot.
Around you right now, there is a goodly amount of boys. One thing to keep in mind is just a small contingent of them broke off in order to chase you and Margaret. A lot of them were funneling themselves towards the main staircase or Lorna's reverse waterfall.
I feel like I gotta fight through them. And maybe Margaret can go that top way and I can go just kind of through and we can regroup.
Yeah, that's true. If you are able to kind of fight and sneak your way through the back line, you will be able to rendezvous with Gable where they are fighting on the main staircase.
Great. And then I can kill them.
Yep. And you can finally kill them, kind of ending the game final boss style.
That's got to be how it ends, though, right?
Yeah.
Eventually.
Well, how did Hancock end?
I have to watch this movie.
They flew away, right?
I honestly don't remember.
I saw Hancock listed on this list of movies that were featuring Black Joy. And I was like, wasn't Hancock kind of a big bummer? Was it like the message of that movie that like his faded love, he can never be around? It was wild.
The whole movie, he was very sad, I think.
Yeah.
He nailed the anti-hero shit. Oh man, I need to watch that movie again. Cause I remember loving that movie for like two-thirds of it. And then once it got into like the actual mechanics of their love and their powers, I was like, I'm now iffy on this,
but it became significantly more complicated than it needed to be.
It really did. It kind of started out as like, oh, this is a superhero who's like fallen on hard times and is not doing his best. And then like somebody reminds him, hey, you should do good. And then he starts doing good. And then it gets fucking weird and up its own ass.
That sounds like the screenwriter was also like a fantasy author is like, I will trick you with my superhero movie, and then I will make this a sci-fi spectacular.
it's like if in Into the Spider-Verse, they were like, Peter B. Parker needs more. He needs more. Sure.
Like right at the end, like with minimal, like right before the final Venom strike.
It's like, what?
Anyway, let's all watch Hancock.
Okay,
I would do that.
That's now homework for us and everyone in the audience.
Together. Let's watch it together.
That would be very
funny. That's not homework, that's a treat.
What if we all watched Hancock and did like a reaction podcast as some bonus content? That would be very funny. Hey heroes, it's James, your game master, and welcome to the mid-roll. Heroes, we are incredibly close to our Kickstarter for the first volume of the Skyjack soundtrack, Skyjack's Call of the Sky. We're launching on September 8th, but there is still time to get ready. Right now, you can head to bit.ly/callofthesky_ks, that's Call of the Sky, the letter K, and the letter S, to reach our preview page, where you can select to be notified as soon as the project launches. We're hoping to get as many people to follow the project as possible, so we're doing a little bit of incentivizing. Right now, we have around 365 followers, and if we manage to hit 420 followers by Friday this week, I'll spend some time on Friday doing luminary readings for folks on Twitter. I already did a round of these so far. It's very simple. You respond to one of my tweets with a question for the luminaries, and I will do a reading and a short video for you on what that reading means. So if you're at all curious about what your future might hold and want some insight from the luminaries, head to bit.ly/callofthesky_ks and follow the Kickstarter to get us over that 420 mark. And get ready for Tuesday, September 8th, when we hit the launch button on Kickstarter. Heroes, I want to take a quick moment and thank our backers on Patreon. We are currently between thank you lists, and we're generating a new one soon. So, if you've been listening for a while and you enjoy the show, and you'd like to hear your name on air, I encourage you to head over to patreon.com/oneshotpodcast to sign up to become one of our Patreon backers. Our backers are the reason the show exists. They pay for the cast, the music, the editing, and everything else that goes into making Skyjacks what it is. And if you decide to be a part of that by sending us $2 a month or more, I'll take some time to thank you personally on air. So a huge thank you to everyone who supports us on Patreon now, and everyone who's going to support us in the future. Now, with all of that out of the way, let's get back to the show.
Okay, I'm going to try and fight these boys, I guess, is where we landed.
Cool.
In the game.
So
I'll figure out how Hancock ends later.
Travis is badly outnumbered, but he's also the first up right now. I think whatever you do, you are going to get a blue die to it because they are kind of moving sluggishly and scrambling to get up, and you're full of that adrenaline right now.
Okay. So what? Okay, let's see. I guess I'll take out my gun. Okay, so the slug pistol. I'm just going to, I guess. Okay, no, they're made of salt. They're salt water. Fuck. Yeah, these are I would assume minions, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, so I'm just going to start trying to plow through these boys. So, my slug pistol is ranged light.
You're close range, so you're going to be rolling against one purple die.
Okay. Oh, that's pretty good for me. So that will be 5 successes.
Holy shit.
Advantages.
Wow.
Holy shit.
There he is.
Travis can do a fight.
Looking at that slug thrower, Johnny, I need to ask you, what is the crit range on it?
Crit four.
Okay, so it's not a critical hit, but it is. What's the damage on it?
6.
6. Okay, so you do 11 damage here.
I'll allow it.
Yeah.
So I'm not trying to, I don't think, take down all these boys. I'm trying to take down enough boys that I can get out of the boys.
I like this a lot. So we had, in previous combats, you had described that Travis holds a gun like Voldemort holds a wand, which is mm-hmm. something that I love. And we know that the sort of martial art style that you cobbled together over two human lifetimes of experience being on the run in a chaotic and terrible world is like savate, the French martial art that involves a lot of kicking and was developed specifically for ships on surfaces rocking back and forth. So you are in this chaotic situation. You find your legs very quickly. You draw your gun. You, of the 5 people around you, you are going to be able to kill 3 of them. What does that look like? Please describe us through the situation where Travis is a little bit John Wicking these people.
So I think that Travis sees like where he needs to go to get out of like being surrounded. So basically the 3 sailors who are blocking the way, I think first he kind of like swings his arm like back around and gets the one on the far left. So he kind of falls down. I think I love the thing where your John's Wick and other movies like that, they like grab the body that they have just disposed and kind of use it as a shield.
I like that too.
So I think he like swings his arm around, gets that one, spins and grabs the body so that he's facing the guy who was on the far right, shoots that one, and then turns to the middle, kind of pushes the body that he was holding towards the middle guy to like unsteady him, and then shoots him.
Oh, that rules. Yeah, so like you move your way across this beach, taking down people and using bodies to defend yourself and basically create an opening for yourself. And You have the difficult task ahead of you of looking further down the beach. You can see this procession of drowned sailors crossing the area where the water has been stopped for the bridge and moving towards the main staircase, where you can see Gable and other crew members of the Uhuru standing strong on the staircase, fighting against this tide of incoming sailors. You will need to kind of move through those back ranks undetected and get there. Otherwise, you're pretty much easily going to be overwhelmed. What does Travis do?
So can I ask what time of day it is?
So it is probably like afternoon or early evening. One of the things that's difficult to tell is there is so much cloud cover. It has been gray and dark the whole day, and what little light is coming through with like a red sun. So there's just not a lot of light to go by, and the best visibility you have is when lightning strikes.
So I want to try something, and I don't think it will work.
Okay.
Do it.
I want to try and transform.
Oh, yes.
But no.
Beast Wars.
But
I don't think, no. I mean, I don't think it'll work. I don't think it'll work, but I want to try.
I mean, I really like this a hell of a lot.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, like, walking through the steps to this, you know, Travis has avoided trying to transform in the past because of this trauma related to an involuntary transformation that kind of led to him being separated from Margaret when she drowned in the river. And you just had therapy for that, and kind of on top of having a few successes doing minor versions of it through Jonnet's encouragement earlier on. This is a big moment. So you have this moment where, yeah, it is probably going to be safest and easiest if you change into a snake real quick. But this is going to be a very difficult thing. I think this is a daunting check. I can't remember.
Is that three purple?
That's four purple.
Four purple. Okay.
So I can't remember what Travis's best magic stats are. I think Travis was very briefly using Primal.
Primal. Primal is the best, and it's not very good.
Okay, so you've got Primal. You can also entreat a Luminary, and you can make a sacrifice to potentially upgrade this check.
Can I pull a Luminary first to see what I get and then decide if I want to do a sacrifice?
Yeah, of course you can.
I would like to do that, please.
This is how let me fetch my
luminaries.
This is literally how this happened before. You did a luminary, you tried to change.
And it did bad.
I mean,
and you did just do really well, so you're past due for a bad roll.
A bad one.
A bad draw.
That's very true.
Well, I was shuffling, and one of the luminaries just popped out of the deck face up, so I feel like that's a sign. And that one was the Union, which is clearly not going to show up on my background filtering thing. I don't know why I tried to show everybody. But that's kind of a little significant and spooky. Let me just pull up the luminaries here.
The Onion.
Briefly employing Liz Anderson.
Excuse me. I'm currently.
I don't know the nature of those contributor contracts. So, okay. The Union, also known as the Communion, its themes are fulfillment, harmony, wholeness, and love. The union binds people and things together. This luminary draws separate things into a stronger whole capable of feats greater than the sum of its parts. It can only act when there is desire, cooperation, and existing bonds. Magicians all respect love as an indubitably powerful force. The union is the expression of love's power. Friends, families, and lovers are never stronger than when they are in the light of the union. Well,
I think I know specifically who's. I think I want to specifically invoke the love and union between Travis and the Forest Queen to do this.
Fuck! Oh, that's cool. And like you very recently talked about that. So yeah, that was one of your confessions. So I think that is going to, it's so thematically appropriate for the moment. I think that will upgrade this 2 times.
So then 2 of my greens will become yellers?
Yes. And you still have the decision of whether or not you would like to make a sacrifice in this moment as well.
I don't think I need to. Looking at this pool here before I roll, I don't think I need to.
Cool.
A good pool to swim in.
That is 2 failures and 2 advantages.
Okay. I don't think you manage to fully become a snake, as it is spring and it is the season of the snake. I think you are racked with pain for a little bit, and your advantages are going to be 2 qualities of a snake that you get to have with you. But like, I think those 2 failures, I will deal that to you as damage to your wounds.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah.
So 2 damage?
Yeah, 2 damage and maybe be in a little bit the middle picture from an Animorphs cover.
Ugh, that's so much worse than and it having worked.
But you do, I think what I'm going to give to you, I think part of what the advantage breaks down to is Travis's skin, because the animals that he turns into are all very pale and white. Travis's skin, maybe instead of you picking 2 animal things, you get to pick 1 because I'll assign 1 to you. Travis's skin turns sickly pale white, so you will look a little bit like a drowned sailor.
Oh. And then the other one, I eat mice.
Okay, cool.
what if it's just like a heightened like perception, you know, like how snakes can like taste the air with their tongues.
I think that's kind of thing. Maybe I think you can literally
being able
taste,
to sense.
You can taste the air with your tongue and sense like other creatures and whatnot. Oh, that's really creepy and weird. I think your tongue like does that little thing.
Yeah.
So you got that little forked thin tongue. It won't impact your ability to speak as your animal parts never do, but like you can do that and it's a little weird and it hurts so much to get you there.
I feel like it just hurts to be like this.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Ooh, nasty.
I think that since he couldn't finish, he's stuck between, but I think that he realizes that it is more advantageous to stay like this than to like go back to being a human.
Right. Right.
So he's just like dealing through the pain to be able to go kill Gable.
That's cool. That's cool. And I love it. So yeah, I think every round that you hang out like this will deal you a strain. So I'll give you an incentive to sift back at certain points, but like you can sense people and you look more like a drowned sailor right now. So because you look a little slimy and pale, they're probably not going to fuck with you.
Cool.
Let's turn to the battle on the staircase with Gable. I think I'm going to have the sailors act first, as they are going to just... What I think they're going to do is, rather than be in a fight with the Uhuru crew, they're really trying to push past so they can get more of their forces into Nordia. So they're trying to make a big charge where they're not really concerned with defending themselves so much as fighting on the run so they can get towards the more vulnerable civilians that they need to get to. So that is going to be two successes and one threat. What I think is happening, the threat I am going to deal to their group as damage, as they are able to charge and start, like, there, I think more harpoons shoot up and stick into those barricades and start pulling them down and aside, clearing a path for their forces. They're going to charge through, but not really at the Uhuru crew members who are swashbuckling with them on the staircase. So the Uhuru crew is just cutting them down left and right as they ascend, because they're not really defending themselves. They're just trying to throw enough people at the problem that they can kind of overwhelm defenses and move against civilians. So the Uhuru crew is damaging them as they go. And so for every disadvantage they got, which was unfortunately only one disadvantage, they are, as a group, going to take damage. But yeah, as they are moving this mass of them forward, they are being cut down left and right. And we can see there's still a very strong procession of them moving up the beach towards the staircase. And their numbers are flowing around and through members of the Uhuru crew, pushing past the barricade and entering the lowest rungs of Upper Nordia. We'll turn to Gable now. Gable, you and your contingent of pirates are fighting hard, but there are still sailors making it through. What do you do?
Between the attention that is being paid to my friends on the boat and the ones that have already made it, my intention is to draw attention. So I'm going to try and make the biggest melee attack that I can.
Yeah.
Mm.
And see if I can take out a huge number of people that's kind of hard to ignore. So, oh shit. Can I use quick strike on this? Because they...
Yeah, I think so. They're not fighting you. So
they're
you're
not fighting.
First.
Yeah. Okay. So that is my pool I've built versus what?
So this is the normal difficulty for melee is two purple dice. There are no leaders amongst them right now, so it just stays two purple.
Okay. That is 5 advantages.
Whoa.
5 advantages and no successes.
5 advantages and no successes. Okay. So what you were trying to do is draw their attention. Okay. Okay, here's what we're going to do. It's not being dealt as damage to the main force of drowned sailors, but I think Gable, you know, is in the middle of the Angels' battle dance, whirling around the battlefield, cutting down drowned sailors left and right. And they are doing it in a showy way. They are trying to cover as much of the stairs as possible while doing this. It is a grand display. Gable, being a 7-foot tall person on the battlefield, is trying to make themselves as big and imposing as possible. And what I think a lot of the advantages can translate to, and Liz, if you have ideas for this, you can let me know, but I think you are going to slow the procession a little bit with this, maybe even noticeably. Which is kind of what. Okay, yeah. What is your idea?
Give them a black die for every attack that's not against me.
Oh, I like that a lot. Yeah, that's easy. So yeah, that will take up pretty much all five of the advantages. So if they're trying to push past like they did in the last roll, they would have a black die to it, which is great. The thing that I think that the failure is, you actually do cause a bit of a delay. And they respond to it. But instead of responding to it by focusing the attention of the procession on you, you can see there is another lightning flash and a kind of blue-green haze fills the air. There is this light glowing, and you can see a couple of drowned sailors have this light glowing around them. And then in a sound of intermingled screams and crashing waves, five drowned sailors are drawn together, and it sort of forms up into a figure. It is a thin man with wild eyes and death pale skin, with a long beard and a mad-eyed expression that glows that same blue-green ghost light. And, you know, we could make you roll knowledge forbiddens for this sort of thing, but I do just want to tell you, you recognize this as one of the other heralds that the Mariner keeps. This is Ahab the Mad. He holds a harpoon in his hand. It is long and gnarly looking. He extends the harpoon to you, issuing a challenge. And so instead of getting the procession of sailors to pay attention to you, you have drawn out one of the heralds to fight you personally, which could be a little bit of a problem. We'll see about that. Scotty Jacks. We return once again to the captain's quarters aboard the Uhuru, which is currently filled with mailbag upon mailbag with letters addressed to the Uhuru and its crew. All right, we got a new one here. Dear Uhuru, everywhere I look, people are talking about it. It's in the news, on the grapevine, in hushed whispered and shady speakeasies. Himbos. Now we all know what a himbo is, a man who is altogether at once kind, beefy, and not the sharpest tool in the shed. They must be all three at once, lest they simply be a jock, a hunk, or simply a decent man. We love himbos. They are a slave to this hateful world in a time of need. We also know of the mystical thembo, such as our own beloved Gable. Oh, you got a shout out in this one, Gable. That's nice.
Who is this?
But we are left with a dastardly quandary. How do you categorize a woman who meets the aforementioned criteria? A bimbo is an insult and not an exaltation. One would never call the dearest Princess Scorpia of the Arachnid dynasty a bimbo. Please, won't you do us all a service and solve this crisis? With warmest regards, Bewildered in Bougeneath.
I'm very insulted.
Now this is interesting, because I can't think of another sort of lexical phenomenon where the root word is like an insult, and then there are all of these words that have come from it that are not, and then you need to find a not insult to mean the same thing as the root word.
It's challenging. Language is an ever shape-shifting monstrosity.
Wow, that was beautiful spin.
You rang.
I didn't realize that so many people thought I was stupid. I think I'm stupid.
Well, that's sort of a symptom of the thing.
I was going to say.
I was under the impression that the term was more having to do with a lack of guile. Someone who is strong but guileless and would never hurt you and also sometimes doesn't know how to spell stuff. Like,
Gable, could you do me a favor and tell me what the word guile means?
Yeah, I was going to ask that too.
Guile is a word that I read in a newspaper, and it means...
So I don't want to put Gable on trial any more than they already necessarily need to be. I think, Gable, you've proven the letter writer's point well enough. You don't need to try any harder.
Also, I'm going to need the return address because I will kill this person.
I'm at a loss here because it is difficult. We celebrate and love the himbo and the thembo, but I feel like the bimbo has been dealt short shrift. Though I will point out that the prefix of that word bim doesn't really imply a feminine gender, does it?
No,
well, them and him do imply gender, right? So maybe it's somewhere in that area.
Like a
herbo does sound bad.
Herbo
sounds like a bad
herbo,
robot.
Fully loaded.
Herbo sounds like a weird like 1940s like TV show. Oh, there goes Herbo.
Well, see, now I'm more in line with Gable. It sounds like a bad robot, like a 1990s robot. Toy that was developed maybe in 97 and, you know, made to really sweep the holiday season.
I've looked up BIM in my
how
don't make an excuse for it. you told a bird. What if you can just like use crows like Wikipedia?
Yes.
Where
crow,
each crow knows exactly one thing
about this.
So I asked a crow.
Careful, all right.
Who asked another crow?
Those crows have questionable sources.
Well, they're crows. They're stupid. Of course not. They're not going to do scientific method. BIM stands for Building Information Modeling. So
what?
You've got that.
No.
What?
No, I found what I think to be a better thing. And that's...
the Travis
story.
No,
the crows have told me that bimbo was originally a slang term for an unintelligent or brutish man.
Oh.
Get out of town!
So then why did they... did it get passed?
It comes from the Italian word, you know, from
Japan.
Bimbo, a masculine gender term that means a male baby or a young male child.
Oh, like a bambino.
Sure, maybe bambino is like a
version of bambino.
Yeah.
Oh,
but I.
So that.
Well, I guess I'm now curious of how it transitioned into a negative connotation for women. I hate the patriarchy.
The answer is probably the 80s. The 80s just ruined a lot of things.
If you're going to wear sneakers to the office, this is what you get.
Okay. So I think BIM is clearly the troublesome part of this word, right? BIM is not testing well.
No.
BIM, correct.
So we've tried herbo. That doesn't work.
That's bad.
Shebo. Nope.
Shebo sounds like a spin-off. Fembo sounds like
I
Fembo.
I don't hate Fembo.
Fembo?
Also sounds like a robot, though.
Yeah, that's true.
There's I'm sorry, a clockwork.
Powers.
Whatever the fuck.
Good save. Way to keep it in universe. There was a moment there where we were in real trouble, and then you came in with clockwork, whatever the fuck, and all of a sudden it's totally appropriate.
I will never be blamed for breaking the reality of this show.
Did any of you ever play the Thief video games?
I think I played one.
Thief series?
That.
Nah.
It took place in sort of a fictionalized, I guess, maybe Victorian setting. Maybe something a little before Victorian. I don't know shit. But they did have robots that were steam-powered, and it was very fun.
I'm glad that we absorbed that bit of information. That's going to help us solve this letter and close this segment.
We could just throw out the roots altogether and just have it be like a proper noun that
like this we, person that, is a
just
bow?
Like a name
that we
Deborah.
Yes. Or or perhaps like a truck or something that's not a proper noun, but
what about, and this one's bad as well, Wobo.
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 I actually.
It know. Sounds sad. You've got woe in there. Thembos and himbos are such happy things, you know?
Yeah, there is a sort of happy go luckiness to it all.
We could do Weebo.
Weebo.
Like wee.
Well, that's
someone that's who's very into anime.
You know,
oh, shoot.
From
I forgot that was
Japan.
A real one. I forgot.
I don't. I mean, this is also bad. I don't like Gerbo.
Gerbo.
No.
Gerbo.
I'm submitting it and rejecting it in the same breath.
Gerbo is very bad.
But I don't think we're gonna get to a good one. I think we need to find the worst one.
The only other one that I can think of is Labo, and that's I don't like that either.
Labo. Yeah.
No, that's that sounds
Lady
Labia switches.
It's labia, isn't it?
It's labia adjacent, yes.
I feel like Fembo was the least objectionable.
I like truck.
And then there's truck.
You know, I'll go ahead. I'll back Gable on this. I'm gonna put my stamp down. No one's asking for my opinion, but truck.
I mean, the letter did explicitly ask for your opinion, so.
All right, but I mean, like, in the grander scheme, no one, you don't need my opinion on this one, but I'm going to go with truck.
All
let's
right,
go F-150.
How do you feel about truck?
I don't care for it.
No, but it we'll go with John. It's in. It's Ford F-150, for sure.
Okay,
does it have a Hemi?
Ooh! Now, wait a minute.
Wait, what was
wait
that?
A minute. What if it's Hemi? Or
yes.
Hermy?
I feel like we're making a new word.
We are. That's explicitly what
all right,
this has
all right,
to
all right,
be.
All right, all right, all
right. At the end of the day.
What about Mabo? Maidbo? Like a maiden?
Mabo.
Mabo?
Mabo.
Maybe Mabo.
I feel like I could get behind Mabo.
It does sound like in New England there's a type of like sweet oatmeal type cereal called Mapo. I don't know if anyone's aware of that.
And I feel like a sweet oatmeal type cereal of a person is kind of what we're describing in a way.
Oh, you want us to end. That's what you're doing.
Want us to wrap it up.
I think we found it. I think it's Mabo.
I think we should keep on spitting, just keep on throwing that ball. Keep it in the air.
We've got the room for another 45 minutes.
Mispo?
Mispo.
Mispo.
All right, I go with Mabo.
Mispo?
Ford F-150.
All right, you know, we're obviously not going to resolve this here. There's too much at stake for us to figure this one out. We gotta leave this one to the philosophers, I think.
Fair. All right, all right. let's get the return address.
Gable, I am going to kill them for sure.
Gable can go. Yes, so we can at least get some closure on the matter.
Campaign Skyjacks is a one-shot network production. For more information, be sure to follow us on Twitter at CampaignPod for updates about live shows and other events we might be doing. You can find more great gaming shows over at OneShotPodcast.com. Like OneShot. Take it from me, heroes, the most fun way to learn about new games is to listen to them get played. Every week on OneShot, I, your host, James D'Amato, bring you actual play recordings with a talented cast of improvisers, game designers, and other notable nerds. Each month features a new group trying a new system, exploring a wide variety of genres. The stories are self-contained, so you can jump in anywhere, and it's a great way to find new games. Discover the magic of RPGs with OneShot on your favorite podcast app. Jonet Kessler was played by Tyler Davis, who can be found on Twitter and Instagram at Tyler A. Dave. Gable was played by Liz Anderson, who can be found on Twitter at Liz_... or on her podcast, Paired. Travis Madigo was played by Johnny O'Mara, who can be found on Twitter at JohnnyInBriefs or on his podcast, Dilettante Ball. I am James D'Amato, your host and game master. You can find me on Twitter at OneShotRPG or on my other podcast, One Shot. The original music featured in this production was composed and performed by Arnie Parrott. You can find Arnie on Twitter at ArnePArrott. And you can find more of his work at ATPTunes.com. This episode was edited by Casey Tony, who can be found on Twitter at Casey Pony, spelled CaseyPoney, or on his own podcast, Neoscum. Our logo was designed by Fiona Shea, who can be found on Twitter at Fiona Pup. The world of Sphere was inspired in part by the music of the Decemberists and the card game Illimat, property of Together Studios. The game used in this production is a modified version of the Genesis role-playing system that was created by a talented group of game designers who were fired by a private equity firm owning Fantasy Flight Games. There are no kings. Take flight, heroes.
Health to the strangers who've ever been kind, and once for our friends ne'er to rise. Twice to the dearest we're leaving behind, who know we can never deny the call of the skies.